Our Old Testament reading this morning will be from Genesis chapter 18, verses 1 through 16. On your pew Bible, you can follow along if you wish, starting on page 14. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you have said." And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, "Make ready quickly three measures of choice flour. Knead it and make cakes." Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant, who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree while they ate. They said to him, "Where is your wife Sarah?" And he said, "There, in the tent." Then one said, "I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife Sarah shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I have grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" The Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old?' Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? At the set time, I will return to you in due season, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied, saying, "I did not laugh," for she was afraid. He said, "Oh yes, you did laugh." Then the men set out from there, and they looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to set them on their way. The word of the Lord.
The second lesson today comes from a verse that we've been studying for a while now, Matthew 25. And we are looking again at these verses of what God cherishes versus what God does not. So from Matthew 25, starting at verse 35, "For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." The word of the Lord. Biblical interpretation is a very serious matter. Churches have been fractured over disputing ways to read the Bible. It is a first-year requirement of all seminarians to learn these methods, and it is the first step that pastors take on their week journey towards a sermon. One of the methods that I find particularly helpful for me is to look at what actions God cherishes versus what actions God despises. I figure if I can live my life in a way that leans a little bit more towards the cherished actions, then I'm probably doing pretty good. Matthew 25 is a treasure chest of these cherished behaviors: feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting the prisoner, welcoming the stranger. All these actions are so cherished by God that God says thank you to the people that do these things. The people are confused because they don't remember doing these things for God, but God tells them that if you did it for anybody, you have done it for me. And it's a pretty big deal for God to say thank you. This week we are looking at welcoming the stranger. And before we get to the Old Testament text that we read today, I want to visit a town with you. This town had it all. Safety, they had plenty of food and water. They had plenty of space. It was a great place to live, and word had gotten out. And so one day, a few friends showed up in town wanting to see this greatness for themselves. They are strangers, but one man welcomes them into his home. Soon, this welcoming man's neighbors hear about the strangers in town, and they start to become fearful. They worry that there's not enough room in the town for these strangers. They fear that there's not enough food or jobs, that these strangers may be dangerous and not have the best intentions. They worry that the strangers will bring more people to their town, more strangers. Their fear grows and grows until the whole town is convinced that the only solution is to rape and murder the strangers. They think that this only will send the clear message that no one else is wanted and they do not want to welcome you into their town. The town decides to march to this welcoming man's door and demand he send out the strangers. The man who has welcomed these strangers refuses, but the town insists. As their violent intent grows, they miss the clouds overhead that are forming. The name of that town was Sodom. Sodom's sin was inhospitality. They had plenty. They could offer a welcome to these strangers, but their fear led them to a ruinous end. This story reminds us that God despises inhospitality. Hospitality and a welcome is important to God because most of the existence of God's people, they depend on the welcome of other people. God's people wander in the wilderness. They leave their homes, they flee for their lives, they randomly follow rabbis on a whim. God's people depend on the faithfulness of God and the welcome of strangers to survive. God will always provide the faithfulness, but humanity does not always follow through with their welcome. In our first lesson today, we find Abraham and Sarah in the wilderness. God has called them to leave their comfortable home that they cared for and cultivated so carefully for a life on the road. They have depended on the kindness of strangers in the past to keep them alive and healthy. And at this point in their journey, they have some extra. They have fields and they have goats and extra flour. And so when Abraham sees these strangers outside of his tent, he is elated. Finally, he is in a position to offer welcome to a stranger, to give back to others what he has received. He has some extra food and water. He has room in the shade for them to rest. He doesn't take a moment to question the action. He jumps up at the offer to welcome a stranger into his home. Abraham does not know these men. Now we get the spoiler that God was near, so we can assume that these were angels or some sort of messenger from God. But Abraham didn't know that when he welcomed them. He saw them as important people, even bowed down to them, but didn't know them. They were strangers. But not knowing everything about these men does not send him into a spiral of fear and worry. Abraham does not worry about who they are. He does not worry if they have weapons or are high or drunk. He does not question if they're there legally or if they have 100 friends on the other side of the mountain who are also waiting for food and water. He does not question if they will take advantage of his welcome and use his resources appropriately. All Abraham knows is that he has enough and that he can be a blessing to strangers. Well, he knows one other thing. He knows that God has specifically asked him to be a blessing to others, that this is a call and a mandate on who he is supposed to be in the world. So when he sees people and he sees his full packs, he does not hesitate to offer that welcome because he knows it is what God cherishes. He does not let the fear that Sodom had take hold of his heart. That doesn't mean that he's not afraid. He might have been, but his faith in God gives him the strength to choose a courageous welcome over fear. And then this amazing thing happens. The prayer that Sarah and Abraham have prayed for years, their cries to God to send them a child, are finally answered. These strangers say to them, "You will have a child." And Sarah laughs because she knows how outrageous the statement is. She has been praying for a child for decades. She has offered every offering imaginable to try and get this child. She has put together every pattern of word in her prayers to try and find that perfect combination. She has tried trusting God. She has tried scheming. She has tried everything to get that child. But no child has ever been granted. And now she makes a couple of cakes and offers them to three strangers. And they're going to tip the scales to get her a child? Yeah, right. Well, it is. This moment of welcome is the moment God chooses to announce that she will be blessed with a baby. God cherishes welcoming strangers. And that's what this story reminds us of, that this means something to God. It gets God's attention and warms God's heart. Welcoming the stranger is worth choosing courage over fear. You may have been asked in your life a common icebreaker question: if your house was on fire, what one item would you rescue? This question is designed to get at the core of our morals. Do we go back for our iPhone or for grandma's quilted blanket? Unfortunately, for many in Paradise, California, they did not even have the luxury of grabbing one item. You may remember last year that the wildfires spread so quickly that thousands were evacuated within minutes of their houses being consumed by the fire. The nearby town of Chico was spared, and in their relief and broken hearts for their neighbors, Chico welcomed in nearly 20,000 people. They offered lower prices for houses, apartments, and hotel rooms. They gave free meals to anybody with Paradise on their driver's license. The town rallied around these displaced strangers with an overwhelming welcome. 1 year later, fear is taking hold of the original residents and burning away their welcome. Each time their favorite restaurant is full and they can't get a table, the fire of fear burns away a little bit more of their welcome. As housing prices rise, the fear takes another acre of their hospitality. Do the police and fire departments seem to be responding slower? The fire spreads farther. Have you seen how many of them are sleeping in the park? The fire rages on. Inch by inch, their welcome is burned away by their fear. Even though their officials and city planners say the town is doing great, the economy is up, infrastructure is being funded, housing has been approved, and crime is down. Every measurable point says Chico is thriving, but the fire of fear is hard to put out. And Sodom knows that very well. Chico could be anywhere. I feel annoyed handing out yet another blessing bag to them the same corner every single week. The church gets calls from people in need constantly, and having to pick and choose who the church can help can quickly extinguish even the most giving of spirits. I fear what will really happen to the cash money that I hand out. It is hard to choose courageous welcome in the face of these fears, and yet it is what God cherishes. And so today, to help us channel our desire for welcoming the stranger, I've invited Ben Ogden. He is the director of Welcome In, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about his experience welcoming the stranger in our community. So Ben has lots of experience welcoming strangers. Tell us about what Welcome In is and what work they do.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here. I want to point out really quickly how many times we can say a word and not really think about the importance of the word. I've been with Welcome In for 3 years now. Prior to that, I worked with the street homeless in Detroit for over 12 years. And when Welcome In hired me, back then, Pastor Judson was on the board, and he made an awesome decision to bring me on. I thought, Welcome In, I-N-N, how clever is that? That's a cute, clever name. But it was literally today as I was in early worship and then now reaffirmed how important that phrase is, Welcome In. It is more than just a clever play. It is more than just a cute logo. It is the foundation of what we do. And what Welcome In is a low barrier day center that welcomes in the lost and discarded members of our community. We are the only low barrier homeless shelter in South Oakland County. So basically anything south of Pontiac, before you get to the Detroit border, we are the only program that reaches out to provide care and services to adult men and women struggling with mental health issues, chronic homelessness, pervasive substance abuse or dependency issues. And we have been doing it since 2003. A very quick bit of history as to how we came to be is in the mid to late 90s, in the wintertime, there were two, for those of us who are older, I remember the Andy Griffith Show when there was a character named Otis. He was the town drunk. And he was jovial, and he would come into the jail and just let himself in and take a nap and sleep it off and then leave in the morning. Well, we had two men like that in the mid to late 90s, and sadly at that time, they were not able to get access to any of the area shelters that were being funded by the county, and both of them expired one winter. In response to that, some area churches in the Royal Oak area decided to open an emergency nighttime shelter. And as they did that, that created a draw of homeless people to an area that had never had to deal with welcoming in that many people. But because they offered a day school, and because some of their partners offered nurseries, they couldn't provide that care during the day, and the guests that were being drawn to them for nighttime safety were essentially out on the streets from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day of the week throughout the wintertime. Well, that was good for nobody. It wasn't good for the guests who were being asked to come and stay. It wasn't good for the community who were suddenly inundated with the guests that didn't know where to go or what to do. It wasn't good for the police that back then didn't have the level of training to deal with the problems that we deal with in today's times. So a lot of church members and community members got together and said, we need to create a solution. We need to provide a place of kindness and of care. And in 2002, they began formulating, and then in 2003, they started the first season of Welcome In. And what we do today is we work to continue to coordinate those overnight churches. They still exist, though they predated us. We go and pick up all of our guests via bus every morning, so that way those with daycares and nurseries can operate. We take them currently to Covenant Presbyterian Church, where we provide them 3 meals a day. We provide them medical care, housing assistance, hygiene care, a clothing closet, a cadre of services. Last season, from December to March, we served over 10,000 meals. Now again, we do this without county funding. We do this because it's to be done. We do this because to the least of my brothers and sisters, you also do for me. And we continue to this day, now going into our 16th year coming up, even though we were not there yet, winter is coming, to offer the kindness and community to people who more often than not are discarded. Though not Matthew, and I think that is one of my favorite quotes, having worked with the homeless through Presbyterian churches now for 16 years, there is a quote that the tail end of it is, the poverty of being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for, forgotten by everybody, is a greater poverty and a greater hunger than simply having nothing to eat. And so it goes back to the name Welcome In, again, what I thought was just a clever name. We are that place that provides care and love and kindness with food and all of these other great things for people that have been lost or forgotten by nearly everybody.
So you talk about all the great things. Will you share a story of somebody who's taken advantage or like been able to use all those great things that you offer to get them onto a better footing?
Sure. In 16 years of doing this, we learned that not everybody on any given day are making amazing, awesome choices. And not everybody who struggles with homelessness are being amazing, awesome people. But my understanding is my job is not to judge them. My job is to love them. And so a lot of what Welcome In does is by being low barrier, and that means that as long as you're not a physical threat, you can come in. If you've been drinking, you can come in. If you're dealing with a mental health issue, you can come in. You are welcome. And when we deal with 65 to 100 guests a day, 24 hours a day, we sometimes deal with conflict, but we do that because some of the people that are struggling are amazing, and some of the people that are struggling are awesome. And you have to welcome everyone to find those who are ready to find a better way. And in 16 years of doing this, I've got many great stories, but this season that we just recently concluded is one of my favorites, and it is about a woman named Melissa. And Melissa is a woman in her mid-40s. She was born deaf. She was provided cochlear implants when she was a child. Those are the implants that they put behind your ears. But Melissa also has a pretty pervasive learning disability. So her parents, who were kind and loving parents, provided all the care that she needed through her entire life. She had to do nothing for herself, and they shepherded her very safely into her mid-40s, but sadly her parents fell ill, and within several months they both passed. Well, Melissa, who never learned sign language, never learned how to read lips, didn't even know where her parents got her batteries for her implants, suddenly found herself being evicted from the family home. And she fell into homelessness the week before we opened last season. Now imagine a deaf woman with a learning disability with no ability to hear, with an income, falling into a place of service, not service in our sense of service, but service of provision of services, that was not founded for the importance of kindness and welcoming. In my opinion, after 16 years, she would have quickly become a victim of some inappropriate actions or behaviors. Fortunately, she came to us. And because we began with the purpose and the point of kindness and care, we directly worked with her very quickly at a much slower pace, writing out everything we would say every day until we could find out ways to get her implants repaired, until we could connect her to housing. Well, once we got her connected to housing and she was able to qualify for that, she was put into an apartment out in Waterford because the housing in Oakland County tends to put people where there's availability. But she didn't know how to use a bus. She didn't know how to read a bus schedule. Who in here knows how to read a bus schedule? She didn't know where to get a bus schedule. So we then worked with her on that. We then connected her to people that could work with her and interpret and teach her some basics of sign language. But then when we went and checked on her, we found that she had an apartment and she had a bus schedule, but it was an empty apartment. She was literally sleeping on a floor in a town she'd never been to, trying to find buses she had never heard of. And we continued to work with her and learned the bus routes and took her to furniture banks and helped her furnish her apartment And our case manager still to this day works with her on budgeting and coupon cutting and menu planning. And these are all these things that her parents loved her so much that they didn't want her to have to worry. But sadly, they disabled her from being able to do it as she got older and when the time came. And the point is now, as we exist today, she is an independent living. She has qualified and receives what is called permanent supportive housing, which means that the state agrees that she can take care of herself, but she will need some help. So she is safe, but not only is she safe, she's starting to thrive. And if we didn't exist, if we didn't welcome 65 to 100 people a day, again, not all of them awesome, to afford a place for Melissa to go where she could feel safe, where she could be welcomed, where she could trust that we would care enough, then I don't think she would be with us today. And so after 16 years, it took me almost 16 years to find my favorite story, just like it took me 3 years to realize that Welcome In is a pretty awesome name beyond just being clever. But that says that we can learn new every day. We are given a chance to realize and see something in a different light. No matter how many times we looked at it before, we just need to look at it once the right way to see the way it's to be done. So I would say Melissa's our favorite success story.
Yes. So those of us who are feeling like we want to help and want to be welcoming, how can we get involved in welcoming strangers?
Sure. So what I always recommend, you know, certainly first off, and we'll get the terrible thing out of the way, is a program that exists on the kindness of churches like you. And again, I believe we're a great program. I wouldn't be here if we weren't. I know that your pastors believe we're a great program. They wouldn't have sat on or currently sit on our board if they didn't. And because we receive no county funding, money is always needed, but set that aside. That's an easy one. What I want people to always do is determine an ideology when it comes to your opinion about homelessness. You either believe in the need to help, you believe that these folks are lost and broken, and then find a way that you can comfortably do so. As Pastor Bethany had referenced, she doesn't want to have to think about whether or not giving money to someone was a good or bad decision. According to God, helping is a good decision. But if you're not prepared to deal with that, find a program, whether it's ours or another, and I can tell you of other programs that do good work. I'll be here at coffee hour to talk about it. But decide if you want to help, step one. Decide how you're comfortable helping, step two, so that way you don't have to spend 1 minute guessing if that was time or money well spent. Step three, get involved. And we are volunteer driven. We operate with 4 staff members, over 65 guests a day, 12 hours a day with only 4 of us, and we served 10,000 meals in 4 months last year. So whether it's helping get food, helping cook food, helping serve food, or being a volunteer who simply wants to come in and sit down and play a game of chess or checkers with a guest, who many of whom have never been welcomed into normal life, that don't know how to communicate and engage, determined to get involved, find a way that makes you feel safe and comfortable, and then do it, and never guess whether or not it had an effect, because it did, and it can change someone's life. Yeah. So do something is the best way.
Yeah. Thank you.